Good Sunday morning, and welcome to Hot Topics, a presentation of Hot 99.5's Community Affairs Department on Duval's Only R&B. Here's Julie Morgan.
Good morning, everyone. I'm Julie Morgan. Today, I'm joined by State Representative Tracy Davis. She represents District 13 right here in Duval County, Florida. We're talking about a number of things from the last session to also something that you'll see on the ballot in November, the restoration of voting rights. I spoke with her just days after the last session ended, and it was quite a session. Let's listen to our conversation. Representative Davis, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Julie. Glad to be here.
We're going to talk about several things today, but the first thing I really want to touch on right now is this November ballot measure. It's going to be on the ballot for everyone to say yes or no, automatically restoring the voting rights of convicted felons. Tell me, what is this all about?
Well, so excited that this is going to be on the ballot, first of all, because I think Florida is probably one of maybe three or four states that's not an automatic restoration state. So with this amendment being on the 2018 ballot, November 6th election, then voters will have the opportunity to actually help Florida become an automatic restoration state. And what that means for those people who are identified as felons is they'll be able to serve on a jury, hold public office, get a job, own a business, and simply become a productive citizen. And I think that's what we need and that's what we want. And so, I mean, here locally, we've been working on this initiative coming out of the elections office for some years ago. That was something we worked on during that period of time, too. So it's very exciting to see Florida take this step.
Why do you think this is so important?
The bottom line is we have 1.6 million Floridians that are just affected by this here alone. I mean, those are people who haven't voted in a period of time because their rights were taken away. And those are people that have done the time, they pay their restitution, they're probably trying to get work and not being successful because of that drawback that they're a felon and that label. And so personally for me, I have a challenge with that label felon, and to have Florida become an automatic restoration state to allow a person, once they exit the penal system and they've paid their restitution, to become a productive citizen and have that label taken away, it's just an awesome thing. And it brings people back into the fold of being productive citizens.
Yeah, that's another thing I was thinking, because maybe they can't find a job, a regular job.
Right.
Right. So maybe they can start their own business.
Correct.
And that creates an opportunity for them.
Right. And others, because if they're starting a business, they're going to, you know, be business owners where they hire people. And, you know, people who have had difficult times like that will normally go and hire other people that have had difficult times. So you're now putting, you know, someone who had a felony, now back into society, and they're all becoming productive citizens. And that's great for our economic system. That's great for a person's morale and their life. And they're now able to support their family. So this is nothing but an awesome thing for Florida to now become is an automatic restoration state.
Voters will have the opportunity to vote on this in November.
November 6th, this amendment will be on the ballot. And so we've had a campaign to get this amendment on the ballot. And with that campaign, we finished 799,000 certified petitions strong. And so the second part of the campaign is make sure voters know that this amendment is there. The ballot probably for the November 6th election will be a long ballot because it's a number of amendments. But we want people to make sure they vote on this particular amendment in order to change Florida's constitution.
Being the year that this is, it's not a big election year. This is something that people could possibly miss.
Yes. And so the campaign will be big and large and loud. And I have to give all credit to the gentleman who really got this started. And that was Desmond Mead and his organization. And so I know they are planning something now for the state, and we will work in the elected here in Jacksonville. We'll work in conjunction with whatever that campaign is to make sure that our voters here in Jacksonville know that that amendment is there and we need them to vote on it.
let me ask you this, and this is kind of a side note, especially with your background. How important is it for people to vote in every election?
You know, when you're working in the elections office, the conversation is always, you know, it's important to vote. And so we're constantly registering people. But, you know, the conversation has to shift. And the conversation now has to shift to making sure that people vote, as well as updating their information. That's sometimes even more important, because people forget when they move from one location to residence to the other. They don't change their address. And so it's just important to register, vote every election, to be included in every election, because your voice matters, and that's how your voice is heard through voting, and then keeping your information updated. And so soon we'll be going through the county in a nonpartisan manner, encouraging and reminding people that they need to update their information, because that's very important for these next few elections, especially our midterm election, as well as our presidential election next few years.
Now let's switch gears just a little bit and talk about the most recent session. This
yes.
was your second session.
Second session, yes.
How did it go?
It was intense, I would say the least. My first session I used to understand the system, understand how to, you know, make bills happen, how bills become laws, just like we learn in school. Dealing with appropriations and how we, you know, have money placed in the budget, and you get all these monies in the budget, and then you know, kind of cross your fingers for the governor not to veto it. And so all of that kind of happened for me. I was able to have some bills turn into law. I was able to have appropriations, and most of them placed in the budget, well over almost $2 million in appropriation. And, you know, at the end of the day, the governor vetoed two of them. So it was quite an experience. But comparing my first session to my second session was really, really intense. I went back in the second session. Irma had happened, Hurricane Irma. And so we had some flood damage, you know, our homes, we're dealing with FEMA, our community was kind of ravaged with the aftermath of that. And I was actually placed on a hurricane select committee. And so we were dealing with hurricane issues as soon as we got back. And then Parkland happened. And for the last 3 weeks of session, which became even more intense, it was, you know, seeing the children, listening to that tragedy, and knowing that something would be done. And so to answer your question, the second session was very intense.
Very intense. So we start off, you mentioned Hurricane Irma. So what came out from the session as a result of Hurricane Irma?
With the hurricane, we needed a lot of data. And so that's something Florida really didn't have, you know, in place. So a lot of monies have been placed in collecting data to kind of forecast that. A lot of monies have been put in hardening some of the systems, the counties around. And a lot of money has, of course, been put in just rebuilding. I think Key West was one of our places, Monroe County, that was hit pretty hard. And so we're putting millions of dollars down there to build a new, I guess you would say, a control center where everything was happening for them to withstand a Category 5 hurricane, something they didn't have. And so they're rebuilding, and other counties are rebuilding. But a lot of monies went into the hardening of our state. We looked at the difference in road travel and how we assess people and get them off of the highways faster, get them from one area to the next faster by changing the side roads into lanes. And so just a ton of significant dollars went into preparing ourselves for a Category 5 hurricane again. And we don't want to be back there, but, you know, after Irma, we realized we needed to prepare for it. And we hadn't done a really good job with that. So millions of dollars went into that. And that took a huge chunk of our budget. We went from an 82.4 budget my first session to an $88.7 billion budget. And so a number of things were increased. But after Irma, again, Parkland happened. So put dollars and cents into that situation. You have to think about the state when it happens in your backyard. A tragedy like that happens in your backyard. So dollars were put into mental health, which we, I think everyone was screaming for. And so we're excited about that. That bill brought millions of dollars for mental health, but it also brought millions of dollars for hardening our schools the best we can. So just a number of dollars spent in a lot of different ways.
Let's talk more about what happened after Parkland. When you guys heard about Parkland, that this was happening, what was the feeling in the room?
We were in the chamber, and initially the announcement was made that a shooter, an active shooter, was on the campus. And at that time, we didn't know how many were injured or killed. And so it was the mood changed from us doing business as usual to a very somber mood. Because at this point, like I said, you're now realizing it's in your backyard, it's in your front yard, it's at home. And so we just didn't know what would happen, or the aftermath, or the intensity that would come after that. And so it was a very somber mood. And we ended the day trying to figure out, you know, what's going on, who's the shooter, how many people were killed or injured. And so it definitely changed the mood of that day, and actually the mood for the next 3 weeks. That's how we ended session.
So we fast forward maybe just a couple of days, maybe just even a day, and students start to come. What happens then?
That probably was the most powerful time of anything I've experienced ever in my years of life. The kids kind of built camps when they arrived on the Capitol. They were everywhere. Their words were powerful. They spoke about how this would never happen again. They spoke about the ban on assault weapons that they were calling for. They spoke about not arming teachers. And they told the stories of what it was like to see their classmates and their friends shot. And so to hear young people tell those stories was moving beyond words. It was, again, the most powerful experience I've had. You know, can't even put it into words. It was really powerful. But I equate that experience and those voices of those students to a thank you, because we haven't been in a situation, I think, in decades where the House or the Senate has even wanted to talk about public safety in the form of gun control. And here we are, on the heels of students raising their voices, wanting an assault ban. And here we are having a conversation, debating a bill, and the governor signing a bill to promote gun safety provisions, guardian program provisions, and a lot of monies toward mental health in that bill. So if nothing else, thank you.
Hot 99.5, keeping you up to date with what's happening in the community. This is Hot Topics on Hot 99.5.
That's powerful. We think about this, and you said that they helped to start a conversation. Because isn't that where it really all begins?
It does. It really does. But unfortunately, in the last, I guess, decade, we would begin to open up our meetings, and in the House, the Democrats had proposed 17 bills, and over the last decade or so, nothing was heard, nothing was moved. And the students from Parkland came and raised their voices against what happened, asking for change, asking for us to do something, and actually vocalizing what they wanted us to do, what they thought or feel that would make them safe. And it wasn't for just Parkland, it's for all of our schools. It's our schools and our children throughout the state need to feel safe going to school and going any place. So it was them raising their voices and coming and talking. They went in offices and talked to their legislators. They talked to our House Speaker. They talked to the President of the Senate. And so they were very active. Parents were with them. And it was definitely a sight to see. But without that type of movement, I don't think we ever would have had the conversation, or I'll say the conversation wouldn't have been now. And so that's why I said thank you, because they allowed us to get together, have the conversation, but that was students moving that needle. And so we give them all the credit.
How important was it to make sure that money was in this bill for mental health. I see that it says more than $69 million for mental health assistance in schools.
Yes.
How important was that?
It's very important. In the bill, it calls for crisis teams and assessment teams. And so in order to have those people in place to recognize that a student is in trouble when it comes to mental health, we have to have monies to pay for those teams. You have to have monies there to follow that student, you know, with the mental health crisis. And so you needed monies in the budget to be able to deal with those situations before it became an active shooter situation. We've done some things in that bill. The governor did a great job. Colleagues did a great job with putting a variety of things in that bill. But we were fighting for mental health dollars last session. So again, until the public safety bill came along, you know, upon the voices of those students, we realized this is something we can't talk about guns and banning guns when we don't deal with a root issue, and the root issue becomes mental illness and mental health. So you have to fund it. You have to find a way to make it where it's a preventative situation instead of reacting after the fact.
Another nearly $100 million for the hardening security of school buildings. What exactly does that mean?
I'll use two examples. So we've talked about bulletproof glass. We've talked about securing the entrances. We've talked about changing the doors to make them double pane doors. It's how you equip the school to prevent someone from just walking in or shooting their way in. So some schools, and I'll just use some of our local schools, are built on an outside type deal where they have the wings and they're outside. So schools like that could use the dollars to probably pay for more additional SRO officers. That's what our district wanted, the flexibility to deal with those dollars as to how they saw fit. Some schools are inside schools where the classes and the wings are inside the school, and so the children travel from one wing to the other inside. So the hardening is, you know, whatever mechanisms can be added to the school to make it safer and create a barrier for someone just being able to access the school easily. Bulletproof glass, whatever that may be, those dollars can be used to harden the schools.
What about arming the teachers? Mm. What does this bill do in that respect?
So when it comes to arming the teachers, the sheriff and the superintendent have to make an agreement. The superintendent of our schools can agree to opt out, but it really is our sheriff, our local sheriff would be Mike Williams, who would come up with a plan, policy, guidelines if this was to be implemented. Again, the school can opt out, but you still have the potential of school personnel and teachers being equipped and armed with guns. So the bill also addresses if the teacher is a teacher who is a full-time teacher, and I think no other duties or responsibilities are required of that teacher, like they're not on bus duty or they're not a coach or something like that, that teacher is not even eligible to be a part of the guardian program. That's the way it's referred to in the bill. But any other teacher or school personnel that's not solely 100% a teacher and they have other responsibilities are eligible for this program. And so, again, it's for me, being a former teacher, I know personally I would not want to be armed. I wouldn't want a gun in the classroom. And so it was really, really difficult for me to vote no on this bill because it was so many awesome things happening in this bill. But because we had that guardian program in the bill, it is the potential of school personnel and teachers being armed. I just couldn't go along with that. I couldn't vote yes on that, along with the students yelling and screaming that they didn't want teachers to be armed. And for me, I listened to my experts, and my experts were my school board members in our district and here in Duval, as well as our sheriff. And, you know, again, the conversations were, we do not want teachers to be armed. We would prefer our additional dollars being flexible so we can use them as we see fit. And we would like to hire more student resource officers to protect our children. And our sheriff agreed. And our conversation, he was like, law enforcement should be left to law enforcement officers. And I completely agree with him.
If we were to look at this objectively and we say the pros and cons of this, what would they be as far as arming teachers?
The pros for a number of people would be Maybe the teacher could protect the children faster if they were armed. They could protect the children better. If they're in a classroom situation, the children are hiding, there's an active shooter. If the teacher is armed, now you have a defense mechanism against an active shooter. The negative for that we have talked about is teachers are under stress. They are working long hours. They love their students. Coming from a classroom situation, you know, and we know teachers have died for their students, protecting their students, and they will continue to do that. But it's just outbursts of some students. I just don't think having a gun in a classroom is a safe situation. A teacher will leave a classroom. Our children have a tendency to go in closets and places like that where they possibly shouldn't be. And so it's a liability issue. And so I feel like that's a lot of the cons for me. And a lot of the cons, I mean, we you know, how do we secure the weapon? Where would the weapon be secured? Those answers could not be gained from the debate we had about this bill. And even to a point where you have special needs students, they have outbursts. They have things where just kind of they have sensory issues. And so some of the language in the bill deals with, you know, maybe this child that's having an outburst now becomes an assailant. So that's another thing that's a negative with the bill. So there's a lot of cons to it. But I think if you're dealing with the V or the pro, it would be a teacher being able to definitely protect the children, I guess, against an active shooter in the classroom without waiting for law enforcement.
I know that you had a couple of wins in this last session. Tell me, what were they?
Couple of wins. Bringing appropriations back to Duval County is always good. So over the last two sessions, I'd say I probably have brought back between my first session and this session over $3 million back to the district. So I'm very proud of that. One of the wins as far as one of the bills I had passed off of the House floor was a vote-by-mail bill that will allow voters to drop their vote-by-mail ballot off to an early voting site. Currently, we have about 45, 50 counties that already do this, but this is actually not codified in law. So what I was trying to do was codify it in law, so maybe all 67 would be comfortable with conducting this procedure and allowing more access into the early voting sites. But again, we have about 45, 50 counties that are already doing it. So with this on the books, now maybe we can get the other counties on board. But I was really excited about that. The other one is the housing discrimination bill, which had been floating around, surprisingly to me, the House for about, I guess, about 5 or 6 years now, started in 2012. And so the housing discrimination law that we have here in the state of Florida does not align with the federal law. And the federal law says that a person can file a civil action suit before exhausting all their remedies with the Commission on Human Relations. So we're trying to, with that bill, we align the laws the same. So our state law will now match the federal law. But at the same time, our commission was going through a situation without having that law in place that aligned. The federal government took a stance of, we're going to suspend the commission. They would lose their fair agency certification. And then the housing discrimination cases that happened in Duval County and the state of Florida would be sent to other states to handle, which would increase the backlog as well as have other states dealing with housing discrimination cases that are happening in the state of Florida, which absolutely makes no sense, along with losing upwards to $800,000+ in federal funding. So I was excited that we were able to pass both of those bills off the House floor. So those are two wins that I'll be happy about for the rest of the time I'm there.
Representative Davis, thank you so much for coming in. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Julie.
In full disclosure, Representative Tracy Davis is up for election this year. The next primary will be held on August 28th. At the time of this recording, her Democratic opponent is Rashonda Jackson. If you'd like more information about the voting process in Florida, we've got a link on our website to help you out to the elections office. Just go to myhot995.com and click on Hot Cares. Thanks for joining us again today. I'll see you next week. Next week's topic, taxes. You know that April deadline is coming up. I'll see you next week, everyone.
Thanks for listening to Hot Topics on Hot 99.5. Hot Topics is a presentation of Hot 99.5's Community Affairs Department. For more information about the program you just heard, visit myhot995.com, then click on Hot Cares. And join us again next Sunday morning at 6:30 a.m. for another edition of Hot Topics on Duval's only R&B, the new Hot 99.5.